Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. I'm guessing that Gotta Dance, the iconic number performed by Gene Kelly in the 1952 musical Singin' in the Rain, could best describe my guest today. Diane Jacobowitz's distinguished career includes performing, choreographing, teaching, and arts administration. She has taught dance to countless children and adults over a 26-year period. In fact, Diane was instrumental in creating dance as a major at Long Island University, where she was a professor for 9 years, teaching ballet, modern dance, choreography, aerobics, and speech. She also ran her own company, Diane Jacobowitz Dance Theater, for 15 years. DJDT toured, performed, and was awarded residencies throughout the Northeast. But it's her work as executive and artistic director at Dance Wave that has been her focus since 1995. She founded the nonprofit to bring dance to a broad spectrum of New York City youth, especially those boys and girls who lack the financial means to afford pre-professional training, and in doing so, exposes them to the rigors of high-level performance as well as world-renowned artists. Dance Wave, which offers programs for children from 18 months to 18 years, reaches more than 3,000 young people citywide. Diane is currently leading the campaign for the opening launch of a brand new dance center in downtown Brooklyn in 2017. Diane, welcome, and thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
When did you know that you got to dance?
Let's see. That's a really good question. I would say maybe when I was about 2 or 3.
You know, I'm hearing that age from other women who have been here who have danced. I mean, how do you know that? I mean, you're still in diapers at 2.
You know what? I actually think everybody has that. I think it's a human being thing. And, you know, we all have bodies, legs, and arms. And, you know, little infants who are still in the cradle, who are still in bed with their mom in the hospital bed, they're moving and squirming and wiggling. And I think it is a natural instinct to being a, you know, human being.
But did you know, I'm not being facetious, at age 2 or 3, to put the movement together when you heard music because it just was a natural act for you?
It was. And I, when I started to get a little older, like 5, then 7, you know, I would put little performances on in the living room. I had the entire Grand Canyon suite, the entire Peer Gynt suite from like morning to, you know, death, you know, just the whole 9 yards. I would make my parents and the aunts and the uncles and whoever was there that day, you know, they had to watch. And then whoever was with me, my cousins or like a friend, we put the whole thing on and, you know, went through the entire album.
Well, that's pretty impressive,
sides.
Those albums. I mean,
yeah,
as opposed to
days of
singing
albums.
Sesame Street,
right.
You know.
Yes.
What kind of dance spoke to you at a young age?
It wasn't ballet until later. It was just modern. Mm-hmm. And there was I was in Westchester.
Which is a suburb of New York City.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And in Greenberg, there was a woman, Greta Levart, who was doing something through the Parks and Recreation Department because my parents didn't know about professional dancing. So we did what we saw locally. Mm-hmm. And she had a love of dancing and she was very creative. It was modern. And, you know, for me, it was all about being expressive. Creative. The technique came later, but, you know, really the expressivity of movement was like what pulled me into it.
And so kind of take us from 8 and 9 to when you got older.
I was always more on the creative end, more on the, like, you know, emotional expression. I went to Westchester Music and Arts Camp. I met Annabelle Gampson, who had her own little company for teenagers, which, you know, actually, now that I think about it, had an effect on me. Mm-hmm. Annabelle was, you know, one of the, she had learned all the Isadora Duncan work. She was really proficient at that and taught us some of that, but she was also a choreographer. And she was a serious performer. She had worked actually as a dancer with ABT for a while. And
American Ballet Theater.
American Ballet Theater had done Rodeo, some of the more modern pieces. So she gave me a taste of what professionalism was. Through that connection, I met some other dancers who were taking a Juilliard preparatory division. So I got involved in taking a Juilliard prep, and I continued to do that all through high school, you know, would leave school early so I could go into the city. I took at Martha Graham, and I was studying at Merce Cunningham's studio, and it all started to grow. It was all modern, but I started to take ballet as well.
And you knew that this was going to be your career?
Yeah, I was going to be a dancer. I was going to be a choreographer. I knew that very early. Yeah, I'd say like around 9, I was telling everyone that anyway.
Well, yeah. And you were encouraged also. It wasn't like I was taking dance and saying to people I was going to be a professional dancer and choreographer, God forbid.
It's interesting because I deal with this a lot now with the kids that are at Dance Wave. So much of being able to follow your dream has to do with your parents and having parents who support it. So I was very lucky that my father and my mother were like, okay, you can do it. I mean, I don't know what their thoughts were about it, but they let me do it. And I like was very strong, you know, very committed.
And determined.
Yeah, very determined to continue. So, I mean, there was no question, you know, and it was actually a struggle when I hit, you know, really trying to be professional, because there were a lot of things that I think I was naive about, you know, just about really how competitive the whole dance scene is and how hard it is to actually like survive as a dancer. And even more than that, to survive as a choreographer in the modern field, which are, you know, these are all like careers with strong financial constraints, you know, and, you know, in order to make a living in these fields, you have to do very, very well, or you're always struggling, which is, you know, what the modern dance field has a lot, struggling artists.
What was it like to audition?
I always got very nervous, just crazy nervous, and it was hard for me. It's hard for me to be in a position to be judged. So always was very self-conscious about it, which is why maybe I started to move over into choreography fairly early and really be clear that I wanted to do my own thing. I wanted to direct. Mm-hmm. I wanted to direct others, that I had a vision, that I wanted to play around in the studio and work with other dancers and create pieces.
So when you went to college, you knew you were going to major in dance?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In the performing arts?
Yes. I went to Ohio State, and I majored in dance, and I loved it. It was intense. You know, a dance major in school is like, you know, 24/7. I was choreographing. I was dancing. I was, you know, taking lots and lots of classes.
I'm sure you were in shows of some form.
Yes. Yeah. There were shows. There was like every semester there were shows, and, you know, other people would be choreographing pieces. There was also a university dance company. And then there were, you know, seniors, kids that were older than you that were asking you to be in their pieces. So there was, you know, performances nonstop, which was great because you got a chance to perform. And I loved performing. And I loved that whole experience.
You loved the performing, but there seems like there weren't sort of dual forces going on there, as you just said a few moments ago. I mean, that there's conflict with that.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. But, you know, actually, once I'm on stage and I'm comfortable doing it, I'm like...
The hell with the rest of us, huh?
That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, something like that.
I got that. So what happened to you after the 4 years at school?
Well, I graduated and I was like, okay, I'm going to be a professional, you know, choreographer and a professional dancer, and I'm going to go just do it. So I moved back to New York immediately. And I started taking classes a lot, and I saw how difficult it was.
So there's a little naivete there going on,
yeah,
you think?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I just had this dream, this like big pie in the sky. I was going to be a famous dancer, a famous choreographer. And I think, you know, I hit the rocks hard, you know. And it was a struggle for the first couple of years. And I really did. I saw that, you know, there were so many other dancers, and so many of them were better technicians than me. And there were so many choreographers, and they all seemed to be, you know, pumped up. They were either like rich kids already, or, you know, they had an endowment, so they didn't have to worry about sort of making it. And I, you know, I struggled. I really, really struggled. And it was little bit later that I started to audition for some postmodern choreographers. I started to work with a gentleman, Kenneth King, and he is, you know, from the postmodern field. We performed at the Museum of Modern Art in the Garden, and they made a film that we were in called Making Dances. Kenneth was one of the choreographers. You know, it's interesting because that film, which I haven't seen in a long time, some of it, Kenneth made a piece called World Trade Word Raid. And we performed this in Battery Park right in near the World Trade Towers. And in the film, you can see us in the park and you can see the World Trade Towers.
Well, obviously, this is before 9/11.
This was way before 9/11. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd love to actually see that film again because the piece was about World Trade and World Trade. And, you know, Kenneth would always say things like, you know, if all the presidents were dancing, we wouldn't be having, you know, these kind of conflicts, which I actually believe is true. And there was something about dancing in front of the World Trade Towers. It's kind of prophetic, you know, it's kind of
unimpactful,
yeah,
too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just to see that image.
Are you earning a living?
I was, but, you know, waitressing.
Marginal. In,
yeah.
How old were you?
I was in my 20s.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, dancing with a bunch of different choreographers, you know, and doing my own work a little bit, just dancing around and taking class and, you know, being part of this whole scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it was like I got an opportunity to go to Taiwan and teach there for a little while. So I was there for like 6 weeks teaching Chinese kids who didn't speak English. But it was a great experience. And then I got asked to teach at LIU.
Which is Long Island University.
Uh-huh. At Long Island University, the Brooklyn campus.
Uh-huh.
There was a dance program. And I was very instrumental in helping move that forward into the major, which was exciting. And I was there for like 9 years, but I was never able to get a full-time position. And it was always as adjunct, which, you know, a lot of universities have to do. But, you know, frustrating for me, again, on a financial level, to be able to really have the kind of income that I wanted to have that gave me more security. During this time, my company was growing.
All right, hold on.
Yeah.
How does one go about starting their own company, Diane Jacobowitz Dance Theater, and why did you do that? And where did you get off thinking you could do that?
There was no question in my mind this was what I wanted to do. I mean, my heart and soul was into this. I mean, it was like every vein in my body was doing this. I wanted to be making dances. I mean, if I couldn't be the greatest dancer in the world, I wanted to make great dances. And I wanted to be able to find that expression through other dancers who may be technically better than me and were able to work with them in a kind of synergistic way so that really exciting things could happen in the studio. And I grew that company over a period of time into the early 90s. And then at that point, I was married.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a daughter. And so life became very, very complicated. But at the same time, I got this opportunity to perform my company, my work at the Brooklyn Academy of Music at the LePerc space.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Diane Jacobowitz, performer, choreographer, teacher, arts administrator. So where did the money come from? I don't mean to sound like a broken record about this, but it's such a fascinating thing from let's put on a play, but it's just not that simple to, you know, to recruit students and, you know, pay for teachers. How did you pull it off?
You're absolutely right. And it was a struggle, but I mean, I was a professor at LIU, mm-hmm. at Long Island University, mm-hmm. during this time. You know, I was teaching ballet, I was teaching modern, I was choreographing on those kids. I was very involved in the workings of that department. I mean, I got along, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that at that point, I had stopped doing any restaurant work. It was all, you know, I was on my teaching. I was able to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when we perform, we got paid gigs. So there was some money coming in. But, you know, you're right. You know, it's also to pay all the dancers. And every time we did a production or we did a concert, that was like money coming out of my bank account, you know, to make it happen.
But it was a labor of love.
Oh, absolutely.
And I can totally relate to that. You can't not do it.
That's absolutely right.
How many people were in your company?
It varied. It would be anywhere from like 5 to 9. You know, there were different people that we brought in at different times for different projects. I would bring in other people. I remember once I did a piece. There was a lot of the men from the Eric Hawkins Dance Company that I had used for a specific project. We worked with Anna Sokolow once. I actually brought her in as a guest choreographer. Anna Sokolow was, you know, a very historic woman choreographer who came from a Jewish background. She, you know, she did pieces about the Holocaust,
uh-huh.
which was amazing to me.
Mm-hmm.
We did one of her pieces, Steps of Silence, which is very famous piece. She's no longer alive, obviously. She was, but she was very famous, and it was kind of a special. It's a special moment for me to invite her in as a guest choreographer, for her to touch my life and her history. You know, it's just like the first Jewish woman choreographer in modern to come to this country and kind of make a difference and have that kind of statement. So she was kind of, you know, inspiring for me. And so my company kept growing, and we had this opportunity to perform at the Brooklyn Academy of
Did
Music.
Did you tour?
We did a little bit tour, yes. We got residencies. I remember getting a residency in Yellow Springs in Pennsylvania. We moved, we went to Ohio. We went to upstate New York. We did a bunch of different tours around the metropolitan area.
But performing at BAM is impressive.
It was very impressive. It was actually, I felt like, the best work that I'd ever done. And ironically, that was the last concert that I did. And it was because, you know, it was a point where my daughter was growing up, and it was just the pull of being a mom and a two-year-old daughter.
All the juggling.
It was painful. You know, it got to be, you know, it was really the stress of doing the BAM concert was a lot. And I felt that I needed to spend more time with my daughter and with the family, which lasted all of 2 years. So I actually, you know, shut down the company in like 94. You know, these things don't stay. When you say you're not going to, when you close that book, if that instinct, if that passion is inside of you, it's not going to stop.
You can't kill it.
It's, you know, like an eruption, you know, like the volcano just wants to come out. And I just, I found myself looking inside and feeling that I wanted to make a difference for a lot of people. I wanted to do something that wasn't a struggle, but that served a greater good, and that could bring my love of dance into the world. And that was so key. So, you know, I started with this festival called Kids Cafe Festival. And it was children from all over New York City, from schools, from like different companies, who could perform on the stage together with the shared love of dancing. And we did it while I was at LIU. So we used the LIU Theater. There was the Triangle Theater at that time. And it was an immediate success. We sold out like every seat. And my daughter, I brought her on stage and she danced. She was like, you know, two or three.
Well, I mean, the acorn doesn't fall far, right?
Right, exactly. And it became, it just opened up this world. It was this other journey that I could go in, that I saw that I could bring dance to these children and bring them, you know, what my love of dancing was, and give them opportunities.
So hence, Dance Wave was born.
And Dance Wave was born.
So let's talk about that. How did you get that off the ground? Talk about that whole process of forming this nonprofit.
I was myself shocked by the success of Kids Cafe, and that continued to grow for many years. We kept that going for like 15 years, every year, and it was different. And as my daughter grew up, the kids also got older. We even brought it to colleges, and we invited colleges to come in and join us. But what came out of Kids Cafe was the idea of dance for all children, dance for everyone. And we started a company, which was called Kids Company. And it came because I saw the same kids coming back every year and wanting to be on the stage. And I saw that which I know was inside of me, this love of dancing and of what that, you know, inherent joy that dance brings to kind of all children. And I thought, I want to form a company that any kid, like kid as in any kid, any boy, any girl can dance. Not those ballet companies where there's anorexic kids who are knitting tights on the side. But this is like any kid can dance. So we started Kids Company, and it was around the end of the decade. It was like 1999, 2000 at that point. And Mark Morris, his school was moving to Brooklyn. And I asked him if we could have an excerpt of a piece for Kids Company. Amazingly enough, he said yes, because at that time he didn't have the school. And it was, I think, a kind of offbeat request. So we started with an excerpt of one of his famous pieces. And I had these 13-year-olds on stage performing, you know, L'Allegro, El Panzeroso, Ed Il Moderato, which is one of Mark's famous pieces. And Mark said something really interesting, which was he wanted his dancers to see the 13-year-olds do it. And I said, why would you want that, Mark? These kids are like amateurs, you know? And he said, because they have this beautiful innocence about them. And I really thank him for that, because I soon began to understand that when I brought kiddom to world-renowned dance, that there was a two-way conversation. In other words, of course, the great artists, the great renowned choreographers were imbuing their artistry and teaching style and technique to the kids. But the kids, in reflecting back to the artists, gave something of who they were. And that slightly changed
the dynamic.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the artists who have enjoyed working with Dance Wave the most are the ones who really respect that in young people. That makes it different. So, you know, if the work slightly changes because it's a teenager doing your work, they would embrace it and like enjoy that difference. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like a collaboration, you know, between the artists and the teenagers. Even though the works were always excerpts of works they had already choreographed, there still was a dynamic that would happen between the artist and the kids.
Did children have to audition to become part of Dance Wave?
Just for the company. For the company, they auditioned. But to go to the school,
and to take classes. It's
everyone.
Open to everyone.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it still is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Diane Jacobowitz, performer, choreographer, teacher, arts administrator. So what is the goal and the philosophy of Dance Wave? You probably had no clue that it was going to take on a life of its own.
No, I didn't. And that's so accurate, because in 2008, we got a piece of real estate. We actually got a home. We had been hobos up to then. I mean, you have to understand, I was like scrappy, do whatever I can, wherever I can. I'll grab the space. I'll do it. I'll pay for it. I'll make it happen. And when I stopped working at Long Island University, I actually got a job at the Berklee Carroll School. And I was having some classes happening there. But in 2008, we found a space on the corner of Dean Street and 4th Avenue in downtown Brooklyn, where we still have a space right now. And everything changed when we had a physical home.
A home, yeah.
And all of a sudden, we're in the studio, which is not that big a studio, but I'm realizing that this is a perfect studio for little kids. And we said, aha, we're starting a school. And that was kind of, you know, upside down, just because mostly people come and I'm going to form a dance school and then I'm going to form a company and then have these ideas. We had the companies going. We had the artistry going. And then we started a school. So it was a little bit upside down, but the school also took off, you know, because the little children in Park Slope and in downtown Brooklyn, and then from all over Brooklyn, as it turns out, started to come in, and the school grew. And we now have kids from 18 months of age to 18 years, and we have an adult program.
So when these kids come to school, the older ones, it's not necessarily an extracurricular activity. It's a goal and a drive that they have, because you give them pre-professional training, and the hope is that they can go on to the next level. And I'm assuming a good percentage of them do.
Okay, so here's what's the little change in what you're saying. Recently, we've really come to understand is that dancing and the training of dancing makes for really great human beings. And what I mean by that is we are now a nonprofit that is serving youth development through the lens of dance. And that means that, you know, this focused commitment, this teamwork, this building of your confidence, this ability to be an articulate young person in the world, this happens through our companies most profoundly, because we are nurturing them. We are having what we call regroup sessions. We're doing social justice discussions. We are, yes, I want them to be professional dancers, but you know, the reality is that professional dance is a tough road.
Right.
And not every child and not every parent wants their child to become professional dancers. It's a limiting field. However, the training of dance is about the best you can do in bringing you into the world with all of these traits, which are great job skills.
And this confidence and this joie de vivre and a belief in yourself.
Yeah, and kind of like an ability to work with other people who don't look
like...
Yeah,
the list is endless.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing that's important to say here is that we have a very strong scholarship program. So we're bringing in a lot of kids who wouldn't have this opportunity.
Mm.
Through scholarships, we can bring in disadvantaged kids who wouldn't have the means to pay for this kind of dance education. But because they have this opportunity, we're also helping them get into college. DanceWave produces an event every year called Dancing Through College and Beyond, which is very successful. Now, this is interesting because we have dance departments in colleges all over the country participate in Dancing Through College and Beyond. It happens in October, and we had like 40 colleges from California to New York with the dance programs, and it's absolutely free for any child who comes from New York City, or if they want to fly there from California, they can come and go to this Dancing Through College and Beyond event. And they can meet and shake hands with the head of the Department of Juilliard. They can shake hands with these dance programs. And this year, we did something we never did before, and this is very unusual. We had the kids have an opportunity to audition for the colleges right there. Now, the reason that's pretty big is that a lot of kids who can't afford to pay the airfare
to go out there.
So I want to, you know, apply to North Carolina School of the Arts. I want to apply to University of Texas. I want to apply to Ohio State. My parents need to be able to pay for the plane fare to go to these auditions, which costs money, quite frankly.
Sure.
So we did something that had never happened before, which is that these kids could check off on the box, you know, which of the colleges that they wanted to audition for. So, and we had this incredible panel of colleges. The other thing that happened that was very cool was they may not have checked off a college, but that college might be sitting there.
Aha, uh-huh, and check like, them off.
Yes, exactly. And they were like, I want
them
you.
Out. Yeah.
I want you. You, uh-huh. you're just the kind of dancer I would like at my school. And, you know, maybe I'm going to give you a scholarship. So kind of an interesting phenomenon started to happen out of that. And we're still like looking at this because, you know, it was kind of a bigger opportunity than we really realized we were stepping into.
Clearly, this is almost a ridiculous question, but you know what an amazing public service you're performing, don't you?
I hope so, yeah.
What do you mean you hope so?
I thank you for, you know, inviting me on your show so that I can tell people about it. Sometimes I feel not enough people know about DanceWave, and I think what we're trying to do is reach every child. So I'm happy to be able to spread the word.
But it's just so clear that this is a greater purpose in addition to exposing young people to the love of dance. I mean, look at all the other benefits that accrue from this. I bet you never thought that.
I didn't. And it's very exciting because it's so much bigger. And I think it's actually more profound because to be able to make a difference for young people in general, and yes, you have the option to keep dancing, and I hope they do. Having dance in your life and being a professional dancer are two different things. And I'm not saying that I don't encourage them. I mean, I do want them, and a lot of them do major in college in dance. And I think that that is still a wonderful thing. But I think that whether they do or they don't, I remember I had a student who wanted to be an ambassador to China. And I'm hoping that she becomes that. You know, she was dancing all the way through, you know, college, but she has these other goals.
Dreams. Mm-hmm.
Well,
they can both be married.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I get the distinct feeling that DanceWave and Diane Jacobowitz are going to be around for a long time to come.
I hope so. I hope so.
How about this? I know so.
But I know so.
And so to find out more about you, is it just dancewave.org that people can go to that website and get information?
Yes. You can go to dancewave.org. You can see us on Facebook. You can see us on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad we got together.
I am too.
Thanks so much for coming today, Diane.
Thank you,
I really
Sandy.
Enjoyed meeting you.
I did too.
Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. And if you know someone who would make a great interview, contact us at www.sandyclineshow.com.